Hi, everybody. My name is Bob, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bob.
I want to thank the Lapo area for asking and giving me the opportunity to carry Narcotics Anonymous's message. Wasn't always that way with Little Lapo and myself. I used to be the RSR for the Mid-Atlantic region, of which there were seven areas. And Little Apple was one of them. And we would start every regional meeting with a motion from Little Apple to impeach the RSR and the alternate. And it would be voted 6-1, and then we would move on with the meeting. So it truly is a pleasure to come down here and be welcome. I am celebrating an anniversary this weekend, and I'm truly blessed to have so many friends, so many people that I got clean with, so many sponsees and my sponsor give up their time to come and share that with me. My first sponsor taught me that the only true gift we have that we cannot replace is our time. And so I really appreciate the time that people have given me this weekend. I was going to talk about relationships, but I was listening to the Clean Time Countdown, and there are so many newcomers here. I want to talk about the gift of recovery. Would all the newcomers, or those with less than a year, please stand up? We want to honor you. We want to welcome you. We want you to know that if this is your first time, your 10th time, welcome. We have been praying for you for a long time, in the hopes that you would find these rooms. We'll take a moment of silence later on for the addict who still suffers. And I believe that if you're an addict of my kind, which simply means you're powerless over the disease of addiction, and you're clean tonight, you're the recipient of that gift. Right now, in Allentown, there's an addict waking up sick, because they couldn't save a wake-up shot. Right now in Allentown, there's an addict going through a dumpster looking for something to eat. There's an addict in Lehigh County Prison who knows there's nobody going to come to see him tomorrow, and he's not going to get a letter, and there's no money in his commissary, and he's going to face that without a drug. There's an addict right now doing a sex act for somebody so that they can afford to buy a bag of dope. Right now there's a crack baby being born because mom couldn't put the pipe down long enough to let this child's first breath be without the pain of the disease of addiction. Right now there's an addict putting a gun to somebody to get enough money to buy a bag of dope. Right now there's an addict putting a gun to his own head because he cannot live with the pain of an active addiction 1 minute more. But for the grace of God and the love that we find in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, that addict could be you or me. We truly are the blessed ones. I think that it's important to understand what NA's message is. I'm going to have the opportunity to share a little bit about how NA's message plays out in my life. But if you're new to these rooms, it's important that you know what our message is. Narcotics Anonymous's message is this, that an addict, any addict, white, black, young, old, Hispanic, fat, skinny, it does not matter, any addict can stop using. It's important to know that it's any addict, because when I first got here, I thought that I was unique, that somehow the laws of science, gravity, or addiction did not apply to me. I was different from you. So if you're sitting here tonight thinking, like, I don't belong here, they don't really understand how much pain I have, how much I've been through, or how much drugs have affected my life, you are in the right place. See, the disease of addiction talks to me. And the disease of addiction tells me, now, Bob, you got 30 years now. You don't really need to do all this. You know, you can stay home. There's a good fight on tonight. What are you doing here? I learned to recognize the disease of addiction in my head. And that disease of addiction constantly and consistently tells me that I'm not good enough, that I'm not worthy enough, that somehow I don't belong here, that somehow I don't really belong anywhere, that somehow I'm defective, that there's something wrong with me. Anytime you hear those kind of messages in your head, recognize that it's the disease of addiction. Our message is any addict. Our message is a message of hope and freedom. In dysfunctional families, people who are strong tend to victimize and put down and prey upon weaker members in the family. In the family of Narcotics Anonymous, we are a functional family. We lift up the weaker members if in our group. We get each other through death, through divorce, through destruction, through bankruptcy, through whatever life throws at us. Together, we manage to get through that. Any message that tries to separate you from that fellowship, from that love, from that belief in yourself and your ability to recover is a disease of addiction. Any message that you hear that's positive, that lifts you up, that gives you hope, that gives you freedom, that gives you strength, that helps you buy 5 more minutes when you don't think you can get 5 more minutes. That's the message of Narcotics Anonymous. That's the message that we are privileged to carry to each other. And I'll tell you what, on any given day, any one of us can really, really need to hear that message. The second part of our message is that we lose the desire to use. So if you're sitting here tonight and you still have the desire to use and you're sitting on your hands and you're thinking, God, I wish I was somewhere else. I wish, you know, and you got that little sick feeling going on in your stomach. If that's what's happening, know that you are in the right place. You're in the right place. But our message is that we will lose the desire to use. I don't know how many meetings you'll have to go to. I don't know how many times you'll have to call your sponsor. I don't know how many mornings you'll have to hit your knees and ask God to give you a day clean and hit your knees at night and thank God for the day that you've gotten clean. I don't know how many other addicts you will have to help. But I know that if you keep coming to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, the desire to use will lift. When I first got clean, I used to lay on my couch, and I knew that if I got up off my couch, I was going to go to the cop man's house. It did not seem to be within me not to use. I would get paid, and I would think, man, I really need to get home. I need to get stuff for my kids. I need to do this. I need to do that. And I would start driving home, and I would think, oh, man, yeah, but I just need a taste, just a little bit. Not a whole lot, no, just a bag or two, just a little something. And then I would say, no, I can't do that. I know I can't do that. I really need to go home, and I would do this. I never was able to go home. If you were never able to go home, if you always use in spite of whether you wanted to use or not wanted to use, you can lose that desire here. And I can't tell you when that will happen. But I can tell you with certainty that it will happen. With those people in this audience who have had the desire to use removed, please stand up. For those newcomers, please stand up one more second, because I want the newcomers in this room to see what hope looks like. This is what hope looks like. If you do not think that you can make it 5 more minutes anytime, grab one of these people who have had that desire to use and stay with them. Thank you. We lose the desire to use here. Here is the blessing part of our message. We learn a new way to live here. We learn a new way to live. Our 12 steps and our 12 traditions serve as a guideline, a path, information, knowledge, teaching that help us find this new way to live. A lot of us come out of abusive, dysfunctional families, come out of spending a lot portions of our life in institutions and with people who tend to want to live by power. We do not live by power here. We live by the Spirit here. We live by the blessing of a loving God who gives us a day clean, who gives us and takes away the desire to use, and who shows us this new way to live. How we learn the new way to live is an interesting thing. Look around at the people you're at the table with and ask yourself, would you take advice from these people on how to have a good love life? Would you ask these people how? Would you ask them to like manage your money? We do not recover by the advice we give each other here. We recover by the love and the sense of community and the spiritual strength that comes from the we part of our message, not from the advice we give each other. Let me give you an example of the advice that we give newcomers here. One of the first things we tell you is what? Do not get into a relationship. I used to ask the people who were successful at that for the first year to raise their hands, but I don't like to identify the bullshitters in the crowd this early in a meeting, and it serves to distract them. I don't know very few people who have taken that advice, but I want you to know, if you're a newcomer, it makes us feel better to give you that advice. Now, before you embark on this deep, hot, meaningful, loving, 2-week NA relationship, grab a meeting list. Grab a meeting list and get as many phone numbers as you can and put that in your pocket. When you're in one of these hot, deep, loving, meaningful relationships, you don't need to call your sponsor quite as often, because sponsors just really never understand how good it is. But when it ends, when she says, geez, I don't think it's working out, and you say, what? And you're like hiding in the bushes to see who it might be working out with. If that's the only thing that you can think about, and you're in like immense pain, remember that meeting list. You will call people on this list that you do not even know. That's how we get through this. That's how we get through both extreme joy and extreme pain, is we share it with each other. My First sponsor used to teach me that it's easier to choke on steak than it is on a mouthful of crap. Most of us have been swallowing crap and putting crap in and out of our mouth a long time. But a lot of us have a hard time with the steak part of recovery, with the good times in recovery, when we get the wrinkles out of our belly, when we get a job, when the sheriff stops chasing us, when we're feeling really good and we like have this program and we're hearing words like happy, joyous, and free come out of our own mouth. I can tell newcomers and I can tell people who've been around just by listening to conversations in the hallway at a convention like this. The newcomers, you say, how do you like the convention? Oh my God. Oh man, I heard this. Oh, it was so exciting. Oh, did you know this guy had 20 years? This guy had this. Oh, this guy did. Oh, wow. Out beyond 5 years, you say, hey man, how you liking the convention? It's like the same old shit. In the beginning, you can come to NA and you can stay clean simply on the message here. Simply on just going to meetings and not picking up. Somewhere, I think out around 5 years or so, you either have a different awakening where you go from a taker, where gimme, tell me, help me, to a point where you're saying, can I give you a ride to a meeting? Hey, do you need a meal? Can I do something for you? Hey, can I take you to a job interview? Hey, you want to come over to my house and just hang out? Hey, what are you doing for a holiday? You all by yourself? Man, come with our family. If you can't make that transition from a taker to a giver here, we start to lose people somewhere out around there. They start to become disgruntled because they've gotten and heard just about everything that they're going to hear. After 5 years, you're not going to hear much new stuff that you haven't already heard. If you don't start applying it, if you don't start practicing it, if you don't start giving it away, my sponsor used to ask me this question. He used to say, if you plant corn, Bob, what do you reap? And I used to think it was a trick question. Corn. Say, that's right. If you plant soybeans, what do you get, Bob? Is that the trick part? Soybeans, that's right. And he said, if you plant patience, kindness, tolerance, love, giving, into the heart of another addict, what do you think you will reap in your own life? This is not rocket scientist shit here. We reap what it is we sow. The people who I know who are the happiest in Narcotics Anonymous and the happiest in their life are the people who are giving it away. Because with the God of my understanding, I cannot outgive God. If I could outgive God, I would be God. Now, some of my sponsees think because I have the answer to a lot of their problems and get them through a lot of stuff, that I'm God. I am not God. I'm just simply a God-like figure in their life. I just said that for the people who I have recovered with long term and who know how sick and demented and where I really came from. We grow here in proportion to what we put in here. Somewhere at around 15 years or so, I woke up one day and I said, I want to go to Iowa. I don't even know where the hell Iowa is. I just started to become disgruntled, dissatisfied, restless. we can do stupid stuff in late-term recovery. I said to my wife, hey, and my partner and I bought a new office building, and I didn't unpack my boxes for 3 years. I couldn't understand why he was concerned that I might not stay there. And my wife, you know, I look to her to fix me because I'm an addict. When I get into pain, I get into a disgruntled thing, it obviously can't be moi. It's got to be you. And so I want you to fix me. And you know what? She tried. The only thing is, when we're in that spiritual change, transition, we can't be fixed that way. I said to her one day, look, all I want is the van, $10,000, and my guitar, and I want to be able to walk out of here with a clear conscience and a peace of mind. She said, I'm not going to use the F word, but she said something really ugly and said, it's not that easy. You just can't do that. Somewhere out around 15 years or so, I started to learn the value of prayer and meditation in my life. I started to learn the value of quiet time. I started to try to grow and change a lot more on the inside. And I started to search in myself a lot more to find my contentment. And I, since that time, do a lot more prayer and meditation for people than I ever did in my life. I'm going to ask you to help me with that tonight. I've got a sponsee and his wife, Billy C., Billy Cook, if any of you know Billy. His daughter is dying with cancer. She is terminal, and she is in chronic and immense pain. And Billy and his wife are just with her all the time, and they're loving her, and they're trying to get through this. So when you say your prayers tonight, or you take that moment for the addict who's still suffering, please consider Bill and Linda and send them your love and blessings in your prayers, because, you know, we go through life here, and sometimes life is not fair, and sometimes life is very painful, and sometimes in the reality of the physical realm that we live in, there is no hope and there are no answers, and without an internal prayer life and some kind of spiritual sense, we just cannot seem to be able to get through that kind of thing. And it's funny how when people don't say anything to you, but they just pray for you, somehow, mysteriously, mystically, maybe even spiritually, things get better, things change. And the outcome and the situation may not be that she lives, but the outcome may be that they get the strength to accept God's will, as hard as that is, for that moment in their life, and to know that they're not alone. If you're a newcomer here, you need to know, no matter what it is you're going to go through here, you no longer need to feel, live, or be alone. We are here for each other. That's what we do. A lot of times when somebody's terminal, when we don't have the answers to every problem here, we can't change every painful situation here. We don't have to have the answer to every painful situation in Narcotics Anonymous. All we have to do is do what my friends did today. Just show up for each other. Just show up. You know, for addicts who have no value when we first get here, who feel really bad about ourselves, who don't hold a lot for our own lives, you know, when we bring our spiritual being just into the presence of another spiritual being, we bring the God that exists in Narcotics Anonymous into the situation. And if we can let him, we can put that on that God. We can put it on the God, and somehow we start to get a peace and an understanding. I have been blessed with three wonderful sponsors. My first sponsor was a little guy, and I got to tell you, when I got here, I wore a pair of bib overalls, no drawers, long hair, carried a gun, couldn't even get people to give me a ride to a meeting. Could I? They didn't want to be in a confined space like that with a crazy person like myself. You might not believe this, but I was angry when I got here. This little guy came up to me and he took his finger and he popped it in my chest. And he said, "I'm going to be your sponsor." I said, "I didn't ask you to be my sponsor." He took his finger again and poked it in my chest a second time and said, "I didn't ask you whether you wanted me to be your sponsor. I'm telling you, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I'm going to tell you how this shit works. I'm going to pick you up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock for a meeting, and your ass better be ready." Now, if you've grown up in dysfunctional, violent families, if you've been institutionalized, you know how to deal with violent people. You either get them quick or get the hell out of the road. Crazy people, that's what scares the hell out of me. I knew this guy had to be crazy to do that. But I had never really, truly felt wanted, felt important enough that somebody would tell me, go beyond my anger, go beyond my bullshit, go beyond my pain, go right through the disease of my addiction into my heart and show me love. I never had that happen in my life. When he did that, I said, okay. I had that man for a sponsor for 14 and a half years till he passed away. He taught me these steps in my life. He asked me I think the most important question that I have been asked in my recovery, the one that has led me on my spiritual path the most. It's a very simple question. He looked at me and he said, "Bob, tell me what kind of man you want to be. What kind of man do you want to be?" I did not have a clue. The Marlboro man. Tattoo, horse, girl, smoke. You know, we reach for whatever it is that we can reach for. He said, "What I want you to do is I want you to look at the men that you know, and I want you to make a list of what it is about that man that you like. What is it about Denny that you like, or Dick that you like, or Kermit that you like, Bill that you like? What is it about the men that you know in your life that you like?" See, I'd never been taught to look at other men in a positive way. I always looked at other men, if there's a bone, we're competing for it. If there's a girl, we competing for. That don't lead much to friendship. That doesn't lead to, hey, this guy's really got this going on in his life. This goes, who the hell does he think he is? But he started me looking at men and trying to figure out what it was about them that I liked and to put a list together. And when I came to him with that list, he said to me, "That's the kind of man you want to be. And that's the kind of man you already are inside. If you can already identify it and value it, it's already in you, Bob. We're going to start on the 12 steps, and we're going to try to bring that kind of man out in your life." And he did. But he did tell me something. So if you're a newcomer and people talk to you directly, My wife listens to me talk to people on the phone. She doesn't think I know she listens to me. But she says stuff to me like, if you say that to them, you're going to hurt their feelings. How could you say that? You need to hear it. That's how I'm going to say it. If it hurts your feelings, change. He said to me, look, the only thing I can give you that I can't replace is my time. If somebody's given you their time, they're giving you their most precious gift, whether they realize it or not. They're giving you something that they cannot replace. We can replace most everything else in our lives. We cannot replace our time. And he said to me, look, I'm going to tell you how this works. I don't want you going to a meeting, drinking 3 pots of coffee, and calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning because you can't sleep and you want to talk. Doesn't work that way. I'm not letting you waste my time. My second sponsor came into my life after I lost my first sponsor. There was a time lag there that I didn't have a sponsor. I just couldn't give up the relationship that I had to ask somebody else and to move off of that. I was, I guess, grieving, going through a process of surrender. And this guy came to visit Dick and Kathy. Met him, I don't even know where they met him, but next thing I know, he's bringing his trailer down to my house, and Sue, my wife, who is not an addict, but who is the most loving person that I have ever met, most beautiful, talented, and loving person I have ever met, I'm not an addict. If I walk home and say, look, I'm bringing a newcomer here, she'll give him a hug, go get a towel and a washcloth, and make them feel as welcome as though they're one of her children. She has done that repeatedly through my recovery. Yeah. Well, she comes home one afternoon to find this guy sitting on a yard chair in the middle of my driveway with a gun across his lap and a hat with some kind of Chinese character on it. She's used to that. You know, my neighbors sometimes will call me with stuff like, hey, Bob, there's some guy sitting over on a pillow in your yard looking at the pond. Bob, and he hasn't moved for a long time. I said, oh, that's Mac. He's just meditating. He's just, well, it's all right. It's all right. Don't call the police. He's praying. Chuck came and spent a couple of weeks, and he helped me start to understand service in NA. And he brought a lot of other skills and talents into my life about communicating with people and building consensus and helping people arrive at group conscience and doing those kinds of things. And I couldn't help, because I'm a deep philosophical kind of a guy, I asked him, what does a Chinese saying on your hat? Is it like something from Sanskrit, or is it Confucian, or what is it, man? And he takes the hat off and he turns it sideways and it says, go something yourself. I said, look, would you be my sponsor? I think we're gonna connect. And then he passed away. And I asked Bob B. to be my sponsor. Here's a guy with 43 years in recovery. Wow. 76 years old, who crawls on an airplane in California and comes to share my recovery. Okay? You don't need a plane ride at that age. You don't need any ego strokes at that age. What Bob has is passion for the message of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous and love for all of us in here. I want to be able to get what he has. I want to be able to be 76. I want to be 40 plus years clean. And I want to be able to still have the desire and the passion to come and share in somebody else's recovery. Somebody else's recovery. See, we need, Bob, would you stand up? They all want to see who you are, man. You're a handsome dog, man. Stand up. Woo! And Bob is courageous because in light of what happened to my last two sponsors, I thought I might have a hard time getting another sponsor. We have a way to live here, and it's in the steps. I kept asking Smoke to teach me the steps, and he kept talking to me about this gift of recovery, the thing that I opened my message with, about how come we're here tonight, and we're just as sick and powerless as the addict who's slamming it right now. Why are we gifted? Why are we blessed? Why are we here? We received this gift of recovery. Doesn't make sense why we got it and somebody else didn't get it, or who got it, or how they get it, or whatever. But he wanted me to understand how blessed I really, really was to have received this gift of recovery. He taught me that the first gift that we get here in recovery is the fact that we get a day clean. If you're a powerless addict and you're clean today, whether it's day one or day 10,763, you're getting the gift, because that's what separates us from the addict who's still using, is that gift. And he really wanted me to understand that, but I wanted to work the steps, because other people in my life who will remain anonymous were like working steps 10, 11, and they were like doing all this, and they would say, what step are you working on? And I would be, did you ever see that cartoon where they got the big dog Spike and the little dog Spiffy, and they're like, I used to be like that with him, about, hey, teach me something, give me something. Not because I really wanted to improve my life. Not because I really wanted to work it. I wanted to have something to talk about. I wanted to be able to like lay it on my peers. Oh, yes. My sponsor says, One day, he says to me, do you want to work the steps? And I said, oh, yes. He said, tell me how they catch monkeys in South America. Even in the other fellowships literature, they don't have anything on monkeys in South America, because I do admit to having read it. The hardest thing in the world for me to say is I don't know. If I don't know, I will make some shit up. Don't laugh, because you will believe that shit. But I couldn't figure out how to do this, and I asked, what's this got to do with recovery? Ever hear that from a sponsor? What's this got to do with my recovery? So I'm gonna teach you. He said they take a jug that's got a little glass thing on to hold the jug, and they tie a rope around that, and they tie the rope to a tree, and they monkeys are all up in the tree watching the hunter. They take a nut and they drop it in the bottle, and they put the bottle down and they walk away from it. Those monkeys come out of that tree rushing for that nut like that was the last bag of dope on earth. And the lucky monkey who gets it picks it up and he reaches his hand in. The only problem is that the bottle is so constructed that he can get his hand in, but when he grabs the nut and he makes a fist, he can't get his fist out of the bottle. What does the monkey have to do to be free? This is an addict monkey. Do you think that addict monkey lets go of that nut? What do you think that monkey does with that nut? Starts to run with it. And for just a brief moment, that monkey thinks he's got it until he hits the end of the rope and likes to pull his arm right out of his body. Now, do you think that monkey only does that once? That monkey will do that till complete exhaustion. Have you ever had one of those romances that end and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and you're laying on the couch because you can't sleep and you got tears in your eyes and you're watching the TV do the roll? That's when this stuff is on TV. You'll see this on TV about that time of night. When that does not work, what do you think the monkey does? The monkey catches an attitude. This is an attic monkey now. This monkey takes its tablet and throws it the whole way over the back of his head, shows them teeth, makes the most ferocious sound you ever heard, lunge, jump, try to attack. It's kind of like a sponsee who you give a direction to that they don't really want to take. And they've already pulled their arm out of their socket, and so they're desperate. What does the monkey have to do to be free? Let go of the nut. When that doesn't work, what do you think the monkey does? The monkey starts to cry. I don't got a car. I don't know. She don't love me anymore. My probation officer says... What's a monkey got to do to be free? That monkey will hold on to that nut until the hunter comes up and renders it unconscious, whacks it, knocks it out, gives it a new consciousness. And the monkey wakes up in a cage. It's kind of like waking up in a cell. And he looked at me. And he said, now, for your first step, I would like you to write about what you and the monkey have in common. What are the things that you keep holding on to that keeps you trapped, that keeps you tied to your addiction, that keeps you locked in such emotional pain and inability to grow, that the only option you see for yourself is using drugs? What are the things that you keep holding on to? When I know somebody's relapsed and relapsed, I ask them, what's the secret? What are you holding, man? You're holding something. Give it up. If you're sitting there and you're holding pain, if you've been abused physically, sexually, mentally, emotionally, if you are an abuser, whatever your pain is, give it up. We are big enough, strong enough, and spiritual enough in this fellowship to absorb it. Give it up. He He asked me what the hardest thing that I thought that I had to give up was. And of course, I had a few vices that had to do with money, property, prestige, and sex. Sex. Ever been rid of sex? He taught me that the hardest thing that I had to give up, and the thing that opened the door to open-mindedness, was to give up what I thought about myself, to start to believe in the possibilities that recovery was possible for me, to believe in the fact that I could live clean, that I could get a job, that I could recapture my family, that I could become a productive and loving member of society. I did not believe that. I had a sponsor in my life who believed in that. And just for today, we say, just for today, I will have faith. Faith of the things we hope for but yet don't see. I will have faith just for today in somebody in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. If you do not have a sponsor in your life who believes in you, get another sponsor. You deserve to have somebody in your life believe in you and believe in the possibilities for you and to hold out everything that recovery is, everything that recovery has possible. I came in here without a job, without an education, with a terrible attitude problem, mental problems, financial problems, and today I have a family who loves me, who shows up for my anniversary. I got a job that I've had for 29 years. I've got men in my life who love and respect me. I got a sponsor who applied 5,000 miles to come and share with me. I got grandchildren who run into my arms, who love to see me, who call me Bobby and want me to watch them do things in the swimming pool and to do stuff with them, and who treat me like a peer rather than like an adult. Starting to get the message. You know, I get so overwhelmed sometimes with how blessed I am, I can't even comprehend it. You know, you can't make up this shit. You can't make up what it's like to be a sick and suffering addict one day and to find yourself clean with a loving family and in a loving community and having the respect of the men in your life. It just boggles my mind sometimes. He believed in me a long time before I could believe in myself. We need to believe in each other. That's what we do in here. We believe in each other. He taught me in my third step to make commitments and to keep commitments. And he taught me how to make decisions, not based on how I felt, but on what was right. And he started to teach me that I didn't have to respond to everything out here, every noise and every distraction, that I could develop an internal code and live by a code of the kind of man I wanted to be. And then no matter how confusing it is out here, no matter what argument, no matter what situation I'm in with my wife that I'm confused, it's her fault, no, it's your fault, it's my fault, who's God Almighty? All I've got to do in those situations is to ask myself, am I being the kind of man that I want to be in this situation, and to let the rest of the situation to a loving God? See, we talk a lot about a God of our own understanding here, but in our second tradition, we define God in Narcotics Anonymous. We give a commonality to God in Narcotics Anonymous. In our second tradition, we talk about God as a loving God. That's our common bond, is a loving God. And he taught me to make commitments and to keep commitments and to turn my life over. And once I took that third step and I turned my life over, it's never been the same. I told you I come in without a high school education. I have my master's degree today. I come in homeless. I have three homes a day, one of which I'd really love to sell. So if anybody's got some money and wants to buy a farm, come see me. I need a little pitch. I have kids who love me, grandkids who love me. I have men who respect me. I have a career where I get to participate in the growth and development of young men who have come into the court system. I get the opportunity to change the destiny of a lot of lives. You know, the destiny of an addict is jails, institutions, and death. We have the ability and the possibility of changing that destiny. All we got to be willing to do is to do it. This guy, without that education, without all that, I got a job on a street program. People don't believe this, but we used to 12-step with a baseball bat. Didn't we, Dick? You were too sick to know? You needed recovery? Excuse me. I know that you need recovery, and you're going to detox. Whether you want to go, you don't want to go, you going. There was six of us who started NA in Harrisburg area, and we were like a little swarm, and we always stuck together. And Dick and I, after a Friday night meeting, one of the wives had asked us to go check on her husband because he hadn't been coming to meetings and she hadn't seen him, and we went and we found him dead. See, sometimes in all this joy and happiness that we have, we forget that this disease kills. This disease kills. Dick and I used to hang out at the detox at a hospital, and we used to 12-step everybody that came in there. Oh, no, we were like on them. And one night they kicked us out. They got security. And they said, no, you guys, it's 3:00 in the morning. You can't be on this guy like this. You can't talk to our patient like this. You guys got to get the hell out of here. And no, we said, no, we got to talk. This guy needs this message. And they had security remove us from Holy Spirit Hospital. The next day, they discharged that guy, and he immediately went home and killed himself. We're blessed. We are blessed. In my fourth step, he taught me to call my life into question, to look at my behavior, to look at my attitudes, to look at the way I treated you, not the way you treated me, to look at a situation from that kind of man that I wanted to be. What does God want me to do? God wants me to live clean and carry this message. The rest of the shit's fluff. That's what my God wants me to do. That's how simple I have it. And it's real simple for me to ask myself, am I doing that or am I not doing that? Am I being kind and loving? Oh, that first sponsor asked me, he said, I want you to pick something and we'll like work on it together. Because he was about helping you change and about helping you grow. And he said, what do you want to work on? And I said, let's work on the sexual stuff. And he started laughing. He said, you don't have a chance at doing that. Why don't you pick something that you can really make some progress with? He said, why don't you like just work on being kind? That's it. In every situation, just try to be kind. Now, you had to know who I was in those days. Man, I was loud, belligerent, angry, offensive, and self-righteous as they come, because I had a message. And to just learn to be kind was a task. I'm still working on just trying to be kind, and it's bought me 30 years, man. So we're not asking you to make radical changes. Just pick something simple like try to be loving, try to be kind, try to be giving, try to be a service here. The people I see who recover here do those kind of simple things. This ain't, we're not asking anybody to like be God. Did you ever notice that most pictures of God are like a middle-aged white guy with a beard? Some mornings when I look in the mirror, I get scared. Because if I was God, we are in deep trouble. He taught me how to find myself in the midst of crisis, how to find out who I was and where I was, because I will give myself up in a minute. Pretty woman walked by. It's real easy for me to forget that I'm married, that I'm in love with my wife, that this is going on, that's going on. If I see something fall out of your pocket and it has a significant value, I can forget that I should reach down there, pick that up, and give it to you. And I can get lost in the chaos of the moment. And he taught me to be able to stop and ask myself, hey, man, is that the kind of man you really want to be? When that two-minute thing, five-minute thing, 25-minute thing, whatever it is over, how are you going to feel about who you are? How hard are you willing to fight for your serenity? How hard are you willing to fight for your self-respect? How hard are you willing to fight for your dignity? How can you lift other people up and be dignified and carry a message of hope and freedom if you don't practice that shit yourself? And he gave me a way. He gave me a way to look at that and to ask myself whether I was there or I wasn't there. Secrets. Secrets. I don't have enough energy to live more than one life. There were a time that if I was with you, I was one way, and if I was with you, I was another way, and if I was you with somebody else, and I was at work, I was one way, and if I was with my wife, I was another way, and if I was with somebody else, I was another way. I just lived a whole lot of different lives, and it was hard trying to keep them all going in the, in some kind of an order, and so wear the hell out of me. In my fifth step, if I have no secrets, if I live with integrity, I can live one life. I can live it with freedom. I can live it with hope. I can live it with joy. And I can live it boldly, man, because I know that I'm doing everything I can possibly do to try to repay God for what he's given me so far. It's all right. You can clap for that. In my sixth and seventh step, we talk about character. I'm only allowed to share for about another half an hour because there's a fight tonight, and we all want to get to see this fight. But if you know anything about boxing, if you've ever boxed, and you've ever been hit and knocked down, your head says, do not get up. That person up there just hurt you. Stay down here. Grab something, close your eyes, do not get up. The only thing that gets you up, that gets you beyond your head, is your heart, is your character. You're either a boxer or you're not. And when you get your bell rung for the first time and you pop down, then you will know whether you're a boxer or you're not. See? Because we can change our minds in a heartbeat. I decided whether I was going to wear this suit, whether I was going to wear a blouse, what I was going to do. I can change my mind like this. My character does not change easily. My character does not change, and my character defects I have worked on and have not been successful, but I have prayed and asked God to remove them. And the same loving God who gives us this gift of recovery will give us that kind, loving, powerful heart with which to carry this message of recovery to the addict who still suffers if we want it, if we seek it, if we humbly ask God to remove those defects of character. A loving God will remove them, and we will have the heart of somebody in recovery with a message of hope and freedom to carry. He taught me in 8 and 9 to forgive and be forgiven. How am I running on time, Mikey? I'm going to tell you a story about 8 and 9. In our first tradition, it talks about our common welfare comes first. You know, for an addict, being right is a very powerful thing. Go to a service meeting. I'm right, and you are wrong. And God is on my side, and you're going to get it now because you are wrong. Being right. My attorney said to me, Bob, when you're wrong, you can go into court and you can handle yourself pretty good. When you're right, you're dangerous. You're scary. Because we pump ourselves up and we get all self-righteous and we say things to the people that we love that we should never, ever say. You know, we say mean, hateful things to each other that we shouldn't say. I am married to the brightest, most talented, loving woman in the whole world. But she used to have a bad habit. She used to smoke. And one day I woke up and I went down in the living room and I smelt this stale cigarette smoke and I looked and there was a dirty ashtray, cigarette butts. And I decided right then and there, that day, that she was going to quit smoking. Oh, hey, look, I've been around here. I'm not stupid enough to just like hit this head on, tell her you got to quit. No, I said something like, I'm really concerned about you. You know, it's not good for your health that you should be smoking. And then all of a sudden, my mouth took on a life of its own. And I don't know whether you've ever had that happen, but you're standing there hearing yourself say shit that's sometimes hateful and sometimes amusing, but it's like you're wondering where the hell this came from. But I started to say to her, and it's not healthy for me. And you burn these little holes in things, and your clothes stink. I go to kiss you, your breath smells funky, and it's like rolling up money and burning it up. And I save my best one for last. And you set a lousy example for the kids and the grandkids. Was I right? Everything I said about that's true. She said something ugly to me. That she told me what I could do with myself. Now, I didn't get, like, all upset. I went up to my sponsor's house. See, because if I'd have gone to the guys I ran with and laid this out, they'd have said, oh, she's a bitch. She's this, she's that. Oh, God, yeah, we'd have rat-packed her. See, we have people, when we want to link up, we can rat-pack around here, man. We can, like, draw sides, get a team, and then attack, right? My sponsor would never, ever say anything bad about my wife. Not only would he not say anything bad about my wife, he would not let me say anything bad about her. Because he would always say, what can you do with you? We can't change her. We can work with you, and with a little work and a lot of hope, we might be able to bring a little change in you. We ain't got a shot there. And he loved the hell out of her. And when his wife passed away, he called me up to the house. I'd been married to this woman 10 years and had, from stupid shit in my life, never bought her a ring. And he called me up one day and said, you know what? You need to get this woman a diamond ring. You need to give her a ring. And he said, I want you to have Carol's ring. And he gave me her diamond ring, and that's the ring my wife has for her diamond ring. Character of the men. Character like Bob has to come. Character like Smokey had to teach me. Character. character, man. Teaching you how to live. Teaching me what was valuable. Teaching me how to sustain relationships. But when I went up there that day and I laid this whole thing out, he said to me something that every sponsee longs to hear. Your sponsor said, "You're right. You're right." Oh my God, it does not get any better than your sponsor telling you, "You're right." But then he said, "If you keep that dumb shit up, you're going to be the most rightest, alonest person in Narcotics Anonymous." It's not about being right here. It's not about who has the right answer. It's about the relationship. It's about being together. It's about saying, not that I'm sorry. Could we say, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry," like we say, "Hey, I love you, I love you, I love you." Well, but it's about saying, "I was wrong. I was wrong, and I'll try to do better the next time. I was wrong, and I'll work on that. I was wrong for trying to treat you that way, and I truly am sorry that I did that." It's the admission of wrong, and it's trying to put back relationships. That's what we have 8 and 9, to amend relationships, to be able to say to each other, "I offended you, I pissed you off, I hurt your feelings, and I'm sorry, I was wrong." And to have the person give you a hug and say, "Man, I'm still glad you're in my life, because I've done the same thing." You know, this message is not just about us. And in the 10th step, he started to teach me about how powerful we are here, about how powerful our message of recovery is here, about what it is we really can do for each other. And in the 10th step, we take a daily inventory. Once we take that 4-step inventory, he taught me that one of the principles in that step is, before I walk into a meeting, before I walk into another gathering of addicts, to be able to look and see who's in pain, who needs some hope today, who can benefit from what I have, who can I give a hug to. Because if I plant patience, kindness, and tolerance into the hearts of somebody else, I can only bring that back into my own life. I can only keep what it is I have by giving it away. If I don't give it away, if I can't be vigilant enough to look and see the pain and suffering outside of myself, if I can't get outside of myself and into you and into the group that I belong to, and if I can't make a contribution, then I can't bring in anything positive into my own life. And he taught me that that 10th step of searching for those people I could help was the principle of that step. He taught me in the 11th step the value of silence, the value of just being quiet, just to hear what goes through your own head. And I listen to the shit that goes through my head sometimes. It amuses the hell out of me. I don't always agree with it, but I find it absolutely amusing, some of the things I think. For those of you who have shoes that have laces in them that are tied, can you remember which lace you threw over which lace to start with? And then which lace you threw over to get the second part to build the loop. Most of us do not even think about how we tie our shoes. We just bend down and tie our shoes. When you're in these rooms for any length of time, we don't sometimes think about what it is that we got here. We just live it. We become consciously or unconsciously competent. We can go about life, and we can go about our own life without looking for somebody who needs what it is we have. And I can tie my own shoe without even thinking about it, but I can't teach you to tie your shoe unless I remember and really look at what was given to me. In my 11th step, it's a time for me to remember what was given to me. Who helped me through this problem? Who gave me something when I didn't have somebody? Who gave me rides to meetings? Who gave me hope when I went through a divorce? Who gave me stuff that I did not have? It's a time in my 11th step to gather the strength and to remember all the blessings that this fellowship and the company of the people that I recover with, all that they have given to me. And for what purpose? What purpose? There's only one purpose for me today. That's to remember everything, to remember that I'm not the addict who's shooting himself tonight or looking for a bag of dope or in prison, that I'm an addict here in a room full of other loving, recovering addicts celebrating a gift of recovery, so that I don't ever forget the power of our message. And the reason that I need to and you need to remember that message is because together, you and me, we carry the most powerful message that another addict can hear. The lie is dead. We do recover through God, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and a fellowship we all love called Narcotics Anonymous. God bless you, and thanks for letting me share.